Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of BrainHackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of BrainHackers.com, and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey there, Brain Hackers. I got another Brains Behind It in our author series. So it's the brains behind the book. And this is a really good one. This gets into gender equality, feminism, a whole bunch of other really cool stuff. And of course, that goes into the brain and the mindset of people and psychology of groups and all that. So I'm talking to Pat Obuchowski, and she wrote Gutsy Women Win. Check it out. Hey, Pat, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dave.
All right, show me the book. Show me this book.
Oh, the book, Gutsy Women Win.
Yeah, and you're also proud of this. You also have Gutsy Leaders, right? So you have a series that you're working on.
Gutsy Leaders, 140 bits of wisdom on how to grow your teams with vision and compassion. Yes.
All right. So the way I looked at, and I took a quick snapshot of your promotional materials, and I get the feeling that you are you're someone who inspires women in the business arena, in the economy, you know, to be successful entrepreneurs, that sort of thing. You know, really inspiring them. And then also a lot of your material is aimed at a female audience, but it's not exclusive to that. A lot of men, I saw some reviews from guys and they seem very interested as well.
Correct. That's very correct. There are two areas, Dave, that I really believe that women need to just step into. And that is, number one, we need to be making more money. We need to step into leadership positions in organizations because we need to make money, because money is power in this world, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually a really good question. I'll let you say your other ones first, but that of course brings up all the politics of equal pay and everything.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And the second arena that I've always been an advocate for and an activist for is having more women in the political arena, because we need to change laws that support women.
Well, I got to say, I think it's very admirable to encourage and inspire, anyone to drive harder and farther and everything. And I think it's really admirable to encourage women to be in the public arena and also to run businesses. I've actually had some business mentors when I was first starting out that happened to be female owners of businesses, and they were fantastic mentors, and I wouldn't be as successful as I am without their advice. From my perspective, their gender was inconsequential, but I'm sure it meant a lot to them. But it was just damn good advice, because they were good at business. And I do understand the idea that, you know, when you're young, you want to be able to, you know, to be inspired. You want to inspire the next generation. It's really important that you have a number of people that you can look up to that look like you, like for lack of a better word, right?
Yep, that's 100%. Correct.
Yeah. So the other side of the coin of this is the, I don't want to ask you about this, what your take on it, but, I had to deal with this in my own personal life, where my wife is a partner in the business. And then when our first child came along, she had a lot of issues trying to work in the business as well as work with the child. And we actually shared parenting duties. I took him to and from daycare every day, and she had the time free, but she didn't have the mind free, if you know what I mean. Her mind was on her child and everything. And it was actually very emotional at the time. And she decided to leave the business. And it was actually very tough for me to take, because, you know, looking back and growing up in my life, my dad was the type of person who did not want his wife to work. And I just thought that was idiotic. I'm like, I don't want all the money breadwinning on my shoulders. Come on. So I always grew up thinking I want to have a two income family. I don't want it to be on all my shoulders. I don't want to be the sole breadwinner. And I became that, you know, and there was a little conflict there, but I did respect her decision. When you dig deep into the stats, a lot of the reason there is a small percentage of the stats that's attributed to discrimination, which is terrible, of course. But a lot of the reason that a lot of women, leave the workforce is to have a family, or it's often been said that they make different decisions, right? And a lot of people really say that in a lot of cases, women make more sensible decisions. We shouldn't necessarily, you know, push them to not. They seem to balance work and family a lot better, and it's one of the reasons why women live longer. They're less stressed. So, with this background in mind and looking at kind of both of those perspectives, what do you really view as kind of this utopian view? You want more women in these positions of power, but do you see it as ever becoming 50-50 without, you know, causing a lot of hardship on women, you know, and changing their decisions, or you just want it to be a little bit more equitable?
You know, that's a really, really interesting question, and we could probably be in conversation for days around that particular question.
I have a feeling there's a lot of videos on YouTube about it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm asking quite seriously, yeah. You know, because we don't want to live in a world where we're pressuring women to be as ambitious as guys, and then at the same time, I don't really, if a guy is super ambitious and wants to work 90 hours a week and kill themselves to make the almighty, the next great iPhone something, whatever it is, you know, you don't want to discourage that, but that the choices those two people make have you know, created this inequity that a lot of people are concerned about. So
yeah, that's very true. You know, in my work as an executive leadership coach, I work with both males and females in that particular work environment. And I can tell you, I work with a lot of males that feel really, truly weighed down on that responsibility of financial responsibility in having to carry the family when their relationships at first, they were both on a career path, or they were both at least working. And then the decision, you know, you have to take a look at it financially and emotionally and spiritually and mentally in many different ways. Who's going to do what, right? Now, I was raised with a mother that worked, Dave. She actually worked. And what happened is she had to go to work when she was raising her family. My father got into a serious car accident at 2 and couldn't work for about, when I was 2 years old, and couldn't work for about a year. So my mom worked, but she worked nights. So I had my dad in the, you know, at nighttime and my mom during the day.
So there
was that type of a situation where they both balanced family. I thought it was a great balance of family. And
that really does seem like a great compromise. And then they also both get to see. One of the things that breaks my heart is I'm, in a way, and I think my wife would agree with me on this, is I'm in a way a lot more maternal than my wife is. I want to spend more time with the child. And I want to have more children, and she just wanted to stop at one, that sort of thing, right? So, you know, it breaks my heart that I have to put in so many hours, you know, but there's definitely a lot of appreciation. She definitely, you know, shows me that she appreciates the sacrifice, but it's a sacrifice. It's not like I'm not superior to her. I make a lot more money, but then I take that money and I give it to her and she pays the bills. So, you know, it's questionable as to who's in charge, I guess. But a lot of these things, like there was a study out of the UK in 2015 that showed that women up to age 30 make on average more than men, like 2%, like a small amount. And then after that age, they made much less because obviously many leave the workforce or cut back quite a bit to take care of kids, you know, so it affects a lot of people.
Yeah, that's true. And I also experience in my own family, I have a nephew who decided to stay home to be the caretaker of raising their three sons. And his wife is the one that goes out and does the work. And I can name probably at least 4 women in my life that have that situation.
That's very true. Actually, Do you think things are changing? And some of this political debate is just talking about like the last year's stats when the world's changing.
Yeah, I think, and it is a political debate too.
That's true.
It is a political debate and a stereotypical debate because a lot of research, you know, has shown even in women, the gender difference in leadership, that women take care, right? We take care, we nurture, and men take charge. They're action oriented, they're task oriented. And there's this whole stereotype.
I still think I'm more female on the inside. I have a lot of difficulty with being, I really have to struggle with being authoritative as a boss, but I treat everyone like a family. But hey, you know, it works as long as you can make it work.
Then we also get into those conversations, the stereotypical conversations about, well, a female is like this, a female is more caring. Well, wait a minute, I know some men are admitting that are more caring than some of the women that I know. But it's an interesting conversation, because it's the way that we can put language around it to help us understand it.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right that you got to talk back to statistics, because, you know, you can easily say that there's more men interested in engineering than there are women. Yet there are some women incredibly interested in engineering, and you don't want them to feel like they're not welcome, you know, and you know, vice versa. Actually, this is actually a book. I'll give a shout out to a friend of mine, Matt Sweetwood, leader of the pack. He single dad, and he reminded me that 1 in 4 single parent families is headed by a father, right? So it's perhaps it's already changing. You know, I was just having a conversation with somebody about how much women, you know, like that, you know, we're both married and stuff, and we know friends who are like dating and things like that. And less women are saying that they want to have children. You know, they're talking about having careers and things like that. So maybe a lot of this stuff that we think is nature is really socially constructed, but it takes time to kind of go through. And the next generation, it looks like, is going to have a lot less children. Yes. And a lot more careers. And certainly with the number of people on the planet, maybe that's a good thing, a lot of people would say.
Yes. I have been reading more and more about, the generations, the younger generations, if you will, 20s, 30s, that are just making the decision to be child-free. Mm-hmm. And that's the new term that is used. It's not childless, you know.
It's good point.
Because you make that decision, because words matter. What we mutter matters. Mm-hmm. And so when you frame it, you know, that I am child free has a whole different feeling than I'm childless. It creates one of choice. It creates one of making a conscious decision in your life versus something that may have just happened to you and you were victimized because you're childless.
It's interesting. A lot of people look at different laws and rules that are passed and think that created a shift in culture. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, you can kind of look back and realize, well, maybe that shift was happening anyways. Maybe, you know, we have an aging population. We have a lowering birth rate that's been lowering since the 70s. Right. So it's certainly not the millennials that invented that, you know what I mean? But it's just been lowering and lowering and changing and changing. And a lot of this actually is also thanks to technology. There's this really great British documentary series called Electric Dreams. And it basically made a family live in a house. And then all the technology that they lived with went every week was a different year. So they started like in the 1960s, and then they went up a year, up a year, up a year, up a year. And it was really neat to see when the washing machine came in, you know, or when the refrigerator came in. And before, they didn't have a refrigerator. You had a local grocery store, and you needed a person, almost always a woman, that would go to the store every single day to shop. Otherwise, people wouldn't eat. You know, you'd have refrigeration. And we're talking like the 70s, that it took till the 70s before most people had refrigerators, dishwashers, all these different, even, you know, the different household appliances. A lot of this technology made the home life so that you can actually manage a home with very little effort, where before it was literally a full-time job, you know, in order to provide for people. So that freed people up a lot. And now I think in the future, you've got a lot of people who are in the gig economy, you know, there's people like on Etsy or something, yes, and they can work from home. And I think a lot of women are really embracing that sort of freedom and being able to have, flexibility in your work seems to be more important to millennials, according to statistics, than even pay in a lot of cases. So maybe that's playing into this, where they want to have their family, they want to make money, but maybe they can do that from home and they can actually, you know, have the kid in the other room sometimes.
Yeah. And the other thing that's really important in a work environment now that millennials do want is they want to be able to make a difference somehow. They want to be able to be aware and know that they are making a contribution to actually something bigger than themselves.
Mm-hmm. And maybe like a previous generation, you got that satisfaction from building a family. You know, you're correct, contributing to your family. You get a satisfaction that you're, you know, a great leadership coach, Dusty Staub, who's a client of ours. He says that everybody needs to feel like they matter and that what they do matters. You know?
Yes.
But
yeah.
maybe, you know, previous generation, I matter and what I do matters because I'm providing for my family and that's it. You know, and millennials, maybe if they're not having the big families, maybe they're looking at the village that they live in and then the country and everything and seeking meaning there.
And then even before that generation, it was all about, I matter because I'm successful in my business, you know, for males. And I matter because I am successful in my community for the women. So it is really interesting how our concept of how we contribute to the world changes. Mm-hmm.
But still nature plays a role though, right? I mean, the number one reason, you know, why guys, you know, and as a guy, I could say this and I don't think I'll get any flack for it, but, you know, growing up, you know, we're really encouraged to make a lot of money because women want a guy with a lot of money. You know, and it's not just like, you never have a guy pull you aside. You never have an older guy saying, oh, you better get rich or you'll never get, you know, get a lady. But it's just always understood. And it's always like the undercurrent of like, the social hierarchy, you know, of men. When you see other guys, you know, there's this idea that in order to attract a good mate, you need to achieve. Right. So I think that plays a role, at least in the super ambitious types, you know, the top tier CEOs and things like that. Like, it explains why somebody makes $1 billion and then doesn't quit. Like, if I made $1 billion, I would just chill. I would be like, I'm good, you know, but a lot of guys are like, no, I need 2 billion. I need 4 billion. I got to beat the next guy. It's because it goes back to that, like, whole attracting a mate thing, you know? Do you think women will ever get that? Do you think that they'll ever be like, you know, like an attractiveness for women who achieve a lot of money? Do you think that'll ever be part of society or is that, you know, in our nature?
That is a, again, oh my gosh, Dave, these are some like killer questions that we have so many different conversations around. And I don't know, you know, I really had hope. I'm not too hopeful any longer, but I really had some hope that I, in my lifetime, would see a woman be president in the United States of America. You know, you spoke earlier.
I still think it'll happen in your lifetime.
I'm praying. I'm working. I'm not just praying for it. I'm working for it.
Politics is like a pendulum. It swings to extremes, especially today.
Yeah, it definitely does. And to be able to take a look at who now has the power. And I'm just not talking about our president, but all of the power. And it is all about money right now. It is significantly about money. That's where our legislation is going towards. Yep. Helping those that already have the money. And take a look at, you know, the gender. And those are primarily men. So when you ask me that question, my first reaction is, not in my lifetime. That won't happen. I don't think that, you know, women will get up there. Yes, we've seen, you know, some extraordinary women get to that particular level and supporting other women in bringing them up. Mm-hmm. But with the majority of our, you know, the two percenters being male, I don't see that significantly shifting as far as gender is concerned.
I think you need just a really good candidate. You need actually somewhat a moderate candidate, not as extreme, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, I wouldn't know off the top of my head, but it'd be kind of an outsider. Like, you know, one of the reasons why Barack Obama rose so quickly was because he was just such a brilliant orator, you know, other African-American candidates just did not have his speaking skills, you know, did not have his poise and everything. And then, so I think if you get a good enough candidate, that appeals, then then everybody will get behind it. And unfortunately, I think that there was, right or wrong, I think there was just not enough, you know, love for Hillary, you know, in that moment, right?
Yeah.
But I did think maybe Susan Warren would be it, or Elizabeth Warren would be it. But I don't think so because she's seen as too far left. So I don't think she could get the moderate, the mass to vote. But Obama was a complete outsider, complete unknown until he spoke at the Democratic National Convention. When I saw that back in the day, when he said the red state, blue state thing, I turned to my friends and I said, that person's going to be president. I just know it. You know, that one speech was very Kennedy-like, you know, and that's all it takes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So as I said, you know, earlier, what you mutter matters. And I think that what President Obama, when he was running for office, he provided a hope and a vision that was so clear to people that needed that. And that's what you know, moved him forward. And so that's what's really important, I believe, in leadership too, that you do get a clear vision of what it is that, that you know, you want to go into, which direction you want to go into, and find the people that that want that vision too, you know, that are willing to play a bigger game in their lives to help achieve that vision and be a part of that, right?
Well, yeah, and I the reason why I'm asking you some of these pointed questions is because I think about these things a lot, you know? I care a lot about the world that my son's going to grow up into, you know, and everything. And it is interesting, like, you could, you know, very logically, you know, crunch the numbers and everything and actually show that a lot of the inequality that we see could even be attributed to nature. Like I said, you know, making different decisions about family and everything. But the result is, it's like let's assume that it is. And I don't think it's been 100, it's as conclusive as a lot of people think. But there's a lot, there's a good argument you could make for that. But even if you assume that it is, then our very nature has created a world where there is unequal representation, like you said. You know, if we assume that, you know, guys are statistically, you know, ambitious, and every once in a while you get you know, you get like a Margaret Thatcher who's female and very ambitious, but it's, you know, the rare gem, if you want to say, you know, if that's the way humanity is. But even in that same sense, now we have a world where men disproportionately represent women, and that's really undemocratic, you know? So even if it is our nature, there's still a lot of problems with that, you know, like whether it's discrimination or whether it's a law that you can change or something, it still creates a situation where you have seven men deciding about reproductive rights and things like that. And not that, you know, men don't deserve to have an opinion on that, but at least, you know, if you had a 50-50 representation, I think people would be more open to that. But then you get into the kind of, not from Canada originally, and I'm a dual citizen now. So our prime minister, Justin Trudeau, actually got a lot of flack, even from the middle, not just the far right, but the middle, for making his cabinet, which is like the pack around the prime minister, exactly representational of male-female, 50-50 for the first time, as far as I know, for the first time ever. And so they got a lot of flack because there was the belief that there were quite a few men that were very qualified, much more qualified than some of the women that were put in, and it was kind of pandering. But, you know, but that was his decision and everything, and of course he got hailed in other areas. But is that kind of what we have to do? Like, we have to kind of make compromises like that and realize that you know, we have to just kind of push it in there and just make it happen sometimes in order for people to get proper representation, I mean, you know, in the political space?
You know, I do believe that there are areas where we need to do that. I believe that we need, because, you know, you said it earlier, that we need to see people who look like us in positions of power. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that model for us the possibilities. You know, I mean, look at Obama and look what he did for the Black community. Is it in encouraging so many, many, many opportunities that children and young adults could never dream of until that particular thing happened. And I'm not a huge believer of, well, put them in because they are this sex or they are this nationality or they are.
Well, the problem with that is it affects the credibility. You know, you're giving them the position, but then if people feel like, oh, you're just there because you're a woman, then you could be incredibly, you know, incredibly skilled, but you always have that hanging over you of, oh, you're not qualified. So that's correct. You can't get one without the other, you know?
And I believe what you had said is that there needs to be an opportunity, doors that get open. You know, one of the major problems for women in business that I run into is that women don't have that network, if you will, of executives, of people in power positions that can help them get there. Mm-hmm. And so what they need is really someone to be able to sponsor them. And let's face it, most of the time it's males. So to be able to find an individual that can support them, that can bring them into that type of a network, that can give them mm-hmm. the ability and give them the challenging work so they're able to prove themselves, is an opportunity to be able to sponsor women and support them in their growth and in their stepping into those types of positions where they will become models for other women and organizations.
That's interesting.
It's not a separation. It's really, for me, how can men who are in hierarchical positions, regardless of business, you know, nonprofits, political arenas, etc., support women? And that is by being there to have open doors, being able to be into conversation, being able to celebrate women around a table, being able to say, I will support you when it comes to being at the table for your advancement, for the challenging work where you can get the visibility that you need. I will be there for you. And that's what I believe is really needed more and more in our world. So that those networks where you get that visibility, where where people are able to see you on both a professional and a personal level, because let's face it, it's not separate, you know, to be able to have those opportunities, gender, religion, culture, whatever.
I was also thinking there used to be a trend in the past. Some say it was kind of a model of the 50s and 60s or something. But there was a trend where people who were in politics were taken from the technical classes. Like there were people who were had PhDs in physics, for example, that ran for office and things like that. And you just don't see that today. It's all lawyers, right? And we have this idea of a career path where you know, if you're going to be a politician, you've got to commit to it forever. And I can't really see if someone, like you said, if it's a female or male that wants to put family on the back burner and go for their career, absolutely they can. But, you know, statistically, you're going to find less and less people wanting to do that. There used to be an idea that somebody could have a career. Let's say you're a physicist or you're intelligent and very skilled in some way. And then you spend a few years, you know, running a government position, and then you can go back to the private sector. Like there was this idea of, it was like, I think right now, I hope I get this right, so they'll get me, tell me if I'm wrong, but it's Dean of Harvard has like a PhD in physics, something like that. And that was kind of, I saw an article where it was kind of a throwback to that sort of idea. And I really like to get back to that idea of, like, you know, representation, that a political job, we shouldn't have a political class in this world. Right. We should have people who have real jobs, and then they're a politician for a brief period of time. They're able to bring the experience of that to politics. The problem is that politics has become so complex. You can't just jump in as if you have good intentions, even you can't just jump in and learn it overnight. I mean, we saw that with the disaster of Trump, where he made all sorts of, you know, big mistakes, aside from, you know, his freaking Twitter, but just like the simple things where he didn't know that a president was in charge of that, or he didn't you know, like he said to some leader, you know, I just talked to the president of like the islands or something, and those islands are actually owned by the United States, so it's actually the president of those islands, you know, and like little things like that. You didn't know, like, a parliamentary rule and stuff. I just feel like it's been necessarily made to be this big pillar where you have to spend your whole life acquiring that power, and like Mark Twain said, you know, I'm really suspicious of people who, well, I'm suspicious of anybody in power, and especially suspicious of those who seek power, you know? So maybe it's our institutions itself that we have to rethink entirely. You know?
Yeah, I'm a firm believer of that. I think we've taken a wrong turn in our society, where in order to be able to be elected into political positions, you need so much money right now be able to run a campaign.
Yeah. And connections and endorsements and all that. Yeah.
Endorsements and, you know, because people vote on people that they like, and people vote on the recommendations of other people in their lives. It's very, very hard, and it's a very complex sometimes to take a look at candidates and different propositions. What I am very happy to see, though, of course, is the amount of women that are running in the primaries that we had.
Yes, that was a huge shift.
All over the United States, you know, not just here in the state of California, but all over the United States, for women saying, stepping up and saying, yes, we need to change. We need to change this.
And that might be a lot of that demographic shift that we talk about, where people are, you know, choosing not to have a family in many cases, but everybody has a desire for meaning. So that's the way they find meaning, and it's quite authentic. They're not, you know, being pushed into it or artificially or anything.
Right. Yeah. And it's the bigger game, you know. I mean, talk about wanting to make a change. Talking about making a contribute, leaving a legacy. Mm. You know, to be able to see these women run and to have them know that they can do this and be just as effective, if not more effective, than the current politicians.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I got to say also, I think it's also, you know, it's really attacking stereotypes, you know, because we have the stereotype of the strong male leader. We don't have the stereotype of the strong female leader even, you know, we don't even have a lot of model for that and how that looks. And we're still kind of figuring that out, you know.
Yes.
But I think I'll be honest with you, I think a lot of it also is you know, goes into attractiveness. We find that male leader attractive and everything, and we're not, you know, as a society, we're not sure how we feel about the female leader. Personally, all while growing up, I thought women in positions of power were hot. I mean, just incredibly hot. Like, I grew up, I'm a big comic book fan. My wife and I met at a Star Trek convention, so it gives you an idea. And my at the time, I've kind of waffled back and forth from time to time, but my favorite captain in Star Trek was Janeway. You know, I just loved her, and I just was so attracted to that, sort of the strength that she exuded and everything. And, you know, my favorite superhero was Wonder Woman, and I was like, mugs and everything, and I don't see a problem with that. I think it's like, you know, my wife likes Batman, like, you know.
Yeah, she, true.
You know, like, I don't see why that's weird, you know. So I think a lot of it is the stereotype of, like, oh, you know, you guys can't be interested in this, girls can't be interested in that. I think we're still stuck in that. So when people say nurture versus nature, and they say, oh, well, you know, men's nature is like this and women's nature is like that, and it'll never change and everything, it says, well, you know, it's changed a lot. You know?
Yes, I agree.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I look at pictures going back to the 19th century, and a lot of people don't realize that all babies wore dresses usually until they were like 4 years old. It was just, mm-hmm. it was just the, you know, boys and girls. You look at all, like, old pictures of royals and things like that in the 20s, 30s, up to the 40s and everything. And then the boys have to wear pants and the girls have to wear dresses. And
yeah, you know, exactly. Exactly.
We had pretty tough guys back then. I didn't see a problem with that, you know?
Yeah. And so, you know, for me, I mean, I told you that my mother worked. I grew up with a mother that worked full time, you know, until, of course, she retired. But she worked full time, and I had that model. So never once in my lifetime did I ever think, when I get married, I'm not going to work. When I get married and have kids, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to raise the kids and quit my job. Never once, because I had that model.
I think that's probably the first stereotype that's been busted. Now the norm is the two-income family. It's very rare.
And it's such a struggle, too. You know, mm-hmm. it's such a struggle, Dave. You mentioned that earlier in your own personal experience.
And also, like, just so you know, just so, like, nobody thinks ill of my wife, but we've already had a plan that she's going to come back into the business in a capacity when my child is off to school. So he's 4 years old now. He's about to go off to school. So it was like a period of time, and anybody who's had a child, you know exactly what I'm talking about. That period is like sacrosanct. It'll never happen again. Mm-hmm. And I'm even trying to, you know, just enjoy every moment of it as well. So that's a big part of it. And, you know, a temporary leave is not the same as you know, a kept woman, so to speak, or somebody who's never working, right?
Yeah.
A temporary leave is perfectly, is admirable, you know, shift in priorities. You know?
Yeah, that is true in a lot of situations, and in a lot of other situations, that break from their career hinders women, because
but it's tough, though, because you can't really adjust for that. You know what I mean? Like It physically injures a career. It's not like people are discriminating. You're out of the workforce for a year. Technology changes. You are essentially less qualified when you come back, and we don't have a solution for that. We don't know how to fix that.
Right.
But it's not that, you know, you come back and, oh, you're being discriminated because you took time off. No, it's literally like you're out of the loop. You're not as productive. You're not as effective. And you've got to work hard to catch back up to everybody.
As you said, you have that huge learning curve because of the amount of time that you've missed and the things that have changed and the people that have changed and the culture that has changed.
You don't want to punish the people that have been working their ass off for that whole year or two while you were gone too, because they've earned what they've gotten. So we haven't really, you know, figured out, we haven't really figured out how society treats, you know, time off for family. I don't think North America is, or even any industrialized nation, is really good at understanding that work-life balance. It's probably the biggest, you know, the biggest problem of civilization itself, that we do not have that figured out. And maybe we'll have it figured out when robots are doing everything for us. I don't know. You know, when the singularity hits and there's no more work anymore. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't sound like we've really solved any of the world problems, but at least we've brought them to the surface today.
Well, but I want to ask you though, as somebody who inspires women and everything, and this is something that someone mentioned earlier, the most male dominated profession, according to some statistic and stuff, is bricklaying. And apparently bricklaying is very, very tough on your body. I had an uncle that did bricklaying for quite a number of years. It pays incredibly well, right? But it's very tough on the body. I tried bricklaying for one like afternoon, you know, on a project, and it was a pain, you know? My point is we're encouraging women to do, you know, engineering, right? We're encouraging women to, you know, be more doctors, represent more in politics and everything. But there is all this whole field and this whole class of jobs that are really dangerous or dirty or heavy and difficult and everything that men dominate, from the garbage, you know, the garbage picker upper to like underwater welding, for example, you know, where there's like one woman in 100 men, you know. Do we tackle that at all? Do we encourage more women maybe to get into trades? Because there's some amazing tradespeople, you know, that are female. It's just very, very male dominated, and that they experience the same difficulty.
Yes, and I have a niece that happens to be in the Carpenter Union. I used to work for a utility company, and one of their primary objectives in recruiting is to recruit more and more women for the field work that takes place in utility companies. And there is...
So it is happening.
Yeah, it is definitely happening. And really, for one of the reasons you said, is that there is nice money to be made. Yep. Nice money and nice benefits.
That is one of the biggest reasons why men statistically make more money than women, because they do the dirty, the dangerous jobs. It's not all the CEOs. It's the people who are willing to put on scuba gear and weld underwater and risk their life to do it, you know, and sweep for mines in Afghanistan or something. Like, these people are paid really well for that danger.
Yeah, and again, there's a challenge there, because that is a very male dominated, very macho. Let me, you know, to put it quite bluntly, very macho, strong. I'm tough. It's the discrimination against women who enter into those fields is really, really challenging for them. Mm-hmm. I had a friend one time that entered into the police force probably around 25 years ago, and she was just faced on a daily basis with harassment. Although she stood it out. But that's the challenge for women in those particular, well, actually any field, but really in those particular fields where it's really your brawn that matters.
Well, it's going to be really interesting. Well, and also like ickiness and stuff, things like, you know, plumbing and garbage and things like that. These are traditionally, because girls were raised to be dainty supposedly and all that stuff. So like that's a big one, the dirty and dangerous work. But it's going to be interesting, because we don't know if that is nature or nurture. We don't really know. A lot of people think, you know, yes, it's in men's nature to do the dirty stuff. Well, you know, maybe it's not. Maybe I've seen a lot of female mechanics that kick ass, you know. So maybe it's not, maybe it is, and we're going to know. But so your job, I think, is to encourage as many women as possible And then, you know, we'll really know as we go through this sort of existential journey of like what makes us happy in life, and we'll make, you know, slight adjustments as time goes on.
Yeah, exactly. And as you know, the message to you and to all of the men that are listening is just be in that space of really supporting women in whatever they want to do. And not only, you know, supporting them by cheering them on, which is really, really important in the arena, but also supporting them by looking for opportunities where they can, you know, they can develop and grow in their own areas.
Absolutely. I'm going to encourage as much as I can. I'm tired of doing all the work. Okay. Somebody take over for me, please. Really? No. It's been wonderful talking to you. Tell people how they can get a hold of you and get your book, because it's a good read.
Yeah. You can head off to my website, Gutsy Women Win. Gutsy Women Win is on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. Feel free to contact me. My name again is Pat, and it's Pat at Gutsy Women Win. And thanks so much. This has been a really fascinating conversation.
Yeah, this has been. Yeah. These are some of the questions that I've really wanted to, and in sincere honesty, I've wanted to get answers to these questions, not in a desire to try to prove any specific political point, but I really think that nobody's making a prediction that will turn out. The future always defies prediction, and it's going to be interesting what actually happens, you know?
And the answers are in the questions we ask. So exactly. Keep asking them,
Thank you very much, Pat Obuchowski. This is, you're definitely a brains behind it. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It. And remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.